This is State of Nebraska versus Winthrop. And Mr. Alexander, is that correct? You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, Your Honor. My name is Robert Alexander. I'm a deputy public defender in Hall County. I represent the appellant, Mr. Lindbergh. In our criminal justice system, the process is as important as the outcome. This, in Mr. Lindbergh's case, the process failed, therefore the outcome can't stand. And the process failed when the trial court allowed Deputy Cleanstein to testify to statements that Megan Lindbergh made on September 28, 2015, over Mr. Lindbergh's confrontation objection. Now, what happened in this case was on September 28, 2015, Hall County deputies were dispatched to Mr. and Mrs. Lindbergh's residence due to a domestic disturbance.
I think we know the facts. Can you skip to the argument? How is the confrontation clause violated when your client calls her to testify himself?
I believe that the court should look at Melendez Diaz v. Massachusetts. Justice Scalia, in that case, the defendant had been arrested for distribution of cocaine. The cocaine was sent to the state lab. The lab had did an analysis, filled out a chemical report. The state did not call the lab technician to testify. The state instead submitted the test results stating that the substance was cocaine over the defense counsel's objection to confrontation. And Justice Scalia, when addressing this issue, wrote, fundamentally, the confrontation clause imposes a burden on the prosecution to present its witnesses, not on the defendant to bring those witnesses into court. The confrontation clause value to the defendant is not replaced by a system in which the prosecution presents its evidence via ex parte, in this case, or in that case, affidavits, in this case, statements, and waits for the defendant to subpoena in court, call the declarant to the witness. The Constitution, the Sixth Amendment, requires the state to call Ms. Lindbergh. Had the state followed that, then exculpatory evidence would have been provided in the state's case in chief.
But in Melinda D., the defendant didn't call the lab expert, right?
That's correct.
So what happens, I mean, yes, I agree with Scalia's comments, but what happens when, how would that result have been different if the defendant had called the lab expert?
It would depend on the trial court's ruling on a hearsay objection at that point, if he would use it for excited utterance or impeachment evidence.
Okay, but assuming it would come in otherwise, I mean, the Confrontation Clause, the purpose of it is, I think, threefold. One, the person has to come and testify under oath. Two, the jury, or the finder of fact, gets to evaluate the person for credibility. And third, they have to face the witness. And we have all of this in favor.
We have that because Mr. Lindbergh was forced into basically a hostage choice. Do I stand on my Sixth Amendment right to confront accusers, or do I waive it? I'm saying that the unconverted evidence, or the uncontradicted evidence, would have been that he struck her, risked being in jail for a substantial period of time, losing everything, or does he have to waive that and give the exculpatory evidence that the state should have presented by putting Ms. Lindbergh on the stand? It messes with the process, and our Constitution outlines the process, and Melinda Diaz says this is the process that has to happen. Sorry, I missed thought went out of my head right there.
And I agree with the process. I'm just wondering, when he calls her himself to testify, how can we find the Confrontation Clause was violated?
Because the court allowed the state to abandon its constitutional burden. We can't let courts allow the state to shift its burden onto the defendant. Had the court sustained the defendant's objection, the process will progress how it's supposed to. All of Mr. Lindbergh's constitutional rights would have been, he will have all his constitutional rights. And if the court still found him guilty, we would have an appeal. But by not sustaining the defense objection, the court is, in essence, shifting the state's constitutional, or the state's constitutionally imposed burden onto the defendant. And something else Justice Scalia had written, I believe it was Washington Davis, stressed that courts can't be negotiate constitutional guarantees or burdens. And the Confrontation Clause requirement cannot be relaxed in order to accommodate trial or the adversarial proceeding. I mean, throughout the Confrontation Clause jurisprudence, the process matters. And in this case, the process wasn't followed. And another kind of wrinkle to this is, by accepting the state's argument, you basically put the defense attorney in the position to determine if the defendant's constitutional, exercise of constitutional right or not. We're at trial. It is my choice, the defense attorney's choice, to decide who I put on the stand outside of my client. In this case, in effect, calling Maggie Lindbergh, I made the decision what constitutional right Mr. Lindbergh was going to have. Had I not called her, then his confrontational right would, without a doubt, be violated. So in essence, the state's argument is allowing the defense attorney to decide what constitutional rights are imposed or waived. Whereas normally a trial is a defendant's choice if they have a jury trial, or a bench trial is a defendant's choice if they testify or they don't testify. That part is being shifted to the defense attorney also. The only thing I would really add outside of that is just, I think it's pretty clear that this was testimonial statements. At the time, Ms. Lindbergh was protected by multiple officers. She was inside the house. Mr. Lindbergh was outside the house. And her responses to the law enforcement was for the use of an investigation. It's substantially similar to Hammond v. Indiana. So I really do believe the basic issue before the court is whether the state can shift its burden of presenting its witnesses onto the defendant.
In this case, at the end of the state's case, was there a motion to dismiss made based on the Confrontation Clause violation?
No, Your Honor, because it was overruled, there was clearly evidence showing that, or what I was thinking, most likely favorable to the state, that there was an assault.
Doesn't that put the appellate court in a position where, your argument is that you have this choice, but the choice is based on what may be error in that the statement came in contrary to the confrontation clause, since the state didn't call the witness. It's difficult, isn't it, for an appellate court to sit and make a decision or write an opinion based on an assumption that future courts are going to make this error. I know that doesn't help you in this case, because in this case, defense counsel's facing this error potentially right in the face. Do we put on the evidence now, or do we not put on the evidence and then hope to reverse this on appeal? And I understand that difficulty. But is that something that we as an appellate court can really consider?
I don't believe a motion for directed verdict would change the review at all, because Ms. Lindbergh was still called, and then the consideration for the motion of directed verdict would been waived because the defense decided to proceed for its own evidence. So I don't really think that would be a sticking point because the defense proceeded for its evidence. I think it would be more of an issue after the defense rests. Okay. No, I must request that the court reverse the district court and remand the case for a new trial.
Thank you. Mr. Martin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, opposing counsel, my name is Joe Meyer. I'm Assistant Attorney General on behalf of the appellee of the state of Nebraska. The state admits that Megan Lindbergh's hearsay statements qualify as excited utterances, and the admission of those statements did not violate appellant's right to confront witnesses against him, precisely for the reasons that the defendant himself called the declarant to testify. evidence against him.
So, let's play it out if when the officer was on the stand testifying, the objections were made to hearsay and confrontation clause. If those objections had been sustained, or the confrontation clause had been sustained, the witness wouldn't have been able to testify as to what the wife said, correct?
Correct.
The state, therefore, can't prove its case.
They would have had to make a decision, I believe, whether to dismiss the case or call Ms. Lindbergh now.
Okay, and had they called Ms. Lindbergh, I think it's safe to assume that she would testify for the state the same as she had testified for the defense, that no assault actually occurred.
Correct.
Okay. So then you recall the officer, but isn't his testimony at that point only impeachment testimony and not substantive?
No, well, first, I would point out that, you know, the case law is that the state couldn't call, can't call it a witness for the sole thing, they can impeach her. So, you know, under the Dominguez case and all of that, that might actually pose an ethical dilemma for the state. So, assuming, I guess, the state calls her and establishes facts outside from the assault, establishes that they're married, or that they live together, that they have children together, maybe the state asks about the assault, she says an assault occurred. No, the deputy, because they're instructed, they qualify to the excited utterance, they believe they come in as substantive evidence under 803. You know, if they're excited utterances, there's no limitation to them being used solely for the sake of impeachment. I mean, they wouldn't have been admitted then only for inconsistent statements. They would have been also qualified under excited utterance.
But if the objection had been sustained,
yes,
then those statements wouldn't have been in at all. Do they ever come in then?
They would have been sustained on the confrontation.
Right.
So then if the state called Ms. Lindbergh to testify, then she would have been made available and subject to cross-examination.
Right, but we assume that she would have testified consistently as she had for the defense. Right, so she's going to testify there's no assault. Right?
Yes.
Then where does the state go? You've got an officer who didn't get his statements in. You've got a wife who says there's no assault. Then what?
I mean, it's not solely for the sake of impeachment because the state has to prove the assault to convict Mr. Lindbergh of the assault. So it would be admitted under a side of the incident, it would come in as substantive evidence. You know, just because he could also be admissible under inconsistent statements, doesn't limit it only for the sake of impeachment evidence. And, you know, the state believes that State versus Smith can control this case. Supreme Court in Nebraska, Smith stated that there is no confrontation violation if the declarant testifies at trial. And further said, the confrontation clause does not bar admission of a statement so long as the declarant is present at trial to defend or explain it. And Ms. Lindbergh here was present at trial to defend or explain her statement. Smith maybe was actually or a little bit different because the prosecution called the declarant to testify. But in that case, again, the prosecution called the declarant after they called the officer who testified the statement. So that shows that the timing of this really doesn't matter, isn't really relevant, contrary to the defendant, to the appellant's argument. You know, it seems to be that on appeal, the appellate court views the record in its entirety and says that did confrontation clause violation occur. In this case, because the defendant called the declarant himself, no confrontation clause existed. And I think the precedent from Smith is clear in that way. You know, there are more analogous cases from other jurisdictions. I support cite State v. Ricketts. State v. Ricketts from Maine is most on point. You know, there's other cases from Mississippi, case from California, other cases. A case I didn't cite in my brief, but maybe goes to the argument the defendant was placed in this precarious position. I point out the State v. Tompkins case from Iowa, 859 Northwest 2nd, 631. And that case talked about, you know, defendants are placed in precarious situations all the time, and the decision whether to cross-examine the witness at all is a, you know, cost-benefit analysis. You know, defendants and defense counsel have to weigh the pros and cons.
Was that Tompkins case an alleged violation of constitutional rights?
Yes, it was a post-conviction relief case. the defendant made an argument that counsel was ineffective for not cross-examining the declarant on his assault. So my understanding was it was kind of the situation where the prosecution called the declarant but didn't ask about the actual assault or didn't ask about the issue at hand. So, and then counsel did not cross-examine or seek leave from the court to cross-examine outside the scope of direct testimony. Didn't seek to cross-examine the witness. So the court did an analysis determining whether a constitutional a confrontation clause violation had occurred, and ultimately within a post-conviction relief case that no confrontation clause.
Does the state concede that her testimony was testimonial?
I don't feel confident to concede. I will say, you know, I didn't do a full analysis.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it looks pretty similar to Hammond in the fact that the deputy arrives, the parties are together. When the deputy arrives, he splits the parties, and then it's talking about past events. So, I mean, without conceding, no, I think it's safer that the state's argument is assuming it was a testimonial. No violation occurred. Yeah. And if there are any further questions, the state would ask that this court affirm the district court. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Murray. Does Mr. Alexander have any time now? All right, Mr. Alexander.
Briefly, I point out State v. Ricketts, that was decided on March 10th of 2009 versus Melendez-Diaz, decided June 25th of 2009. And the Melendez-Diaz decision was the first time the U.S. Supreme Court specifically stated that the state has a burden to call its own witnesses. So this Ricketts case was decided before that proclamation was made. I'm not familiar with the State v. Tompkin case, but the Constitution or the Confrontation Clause affords the defendant the opportunity to cross-examine his accuser, not an effective cross-examination. So it's still a different situation. He had the opportunity, and the counsel decided not to take it. I think the state pointed out, State v. Smith, state called the witness to testify. The state fulfilled its burden by calling a witness. Same with people versus Rodriguez and mostly other cases that the state cited in its brief.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Mr. Alexander. Case to be taken under submission. And the attorneys are excused.